Hey guys, this is CTP with Barbell Shrug. For the video version of all these podcasts, go to our website, fitter.tv. That's FITR.TV. Check out the video version of all of them. They're a lot cooler. They're super juicy and tasty.
All right, guys. Episode 22, Barbell Shrug, Strength and Conditioning Podcast.
Did you make that number up, or is that the number? You like go back and figure out how many we've done? And
it's on the website.
Is it?
Chris doesn't get to the website.
No, I don't know.
The last one was 21, so I'm assuming today's 22.
Which one was that one? The one that didn't record?
No, we skipped that one.
Okay.
Because so it didn't record.
Theoretically, we've done like almost
We did a whole podcast and none of it recorded.
There's a whole treasure trove of ones that have not aired.
That's true.
One day it'll be a special DVD release of raw, unedited.
Yeah. Can't listen with your kids. Podcast.
I still haven't watched the pool party one that we didn't post.
Yeah, we need to watch that.
Maybe we'll post that.
Girls in bikinis.
After we edit out all the ridiculous parts.
Right. I'm Mike
Somebody
Bledsoe.
Was being ridiculous.
I've been running CrossFit gym for about 5 years, Faction Strength Conditioning, home of CrossFit Memphis. All sorts of awesome experience so far.
That was very specific.
We do a lot of, we're very weightlifting oriented, strength oriented, and we usually do pretty good at regionals.
But we still like our fitness. We like our fitness, don't we?
We're all about the health and fitness, with a little bit of performance.
And not about doing dumb things.
I'm here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore. They can tell you about themselves.
I'm Doug Larson. I'm one of Mike's business partners. He actually started the gym, and then I came in a little bit. After he kind of got it off the ground, but been working with Mike for a couple of years, just training folks and trying to learn about business in the process. And now we've been doing pretty well, so we're trying to give back by doing a podcast. We talk about all the things we've learned over the years. Chris?
Yeah, I've been hanging out in the gym as long as Bledsoe's had it open, training and coaching and then having fun, representing. Hey. Doing some things like a little writing here and there, sharing whatever idea I can share that can be useful.
Mm-hmm.
As a group, we've tried and done most things to various degrees of success and terrible failure, so we can have quite effective exchanges about what you probably should consider doing and what you should probably consider not doing.
That's true. Time mistakes been made, and we won't repeat them. Hopefully, you won't either.
Well, we'll just repeat the fun ones.
That's right.
Hey, all right.
The ones that penicillin can fix.
Yeah.
We're going to go over a few topics today. We're going to talk about muscle actions in regard to weightlifting, conditioning, tempo training, plyometrics, and injuries. We're also going to talk about muscle building for CrossFitters versus strength. Talking about a little bit about certifications, what certifications you might want to look at getting. And then also, it's been brought up a little bit in our gym lately. I'm not sure. I'm not sure of how much of our audience is going to be on board or know about this ahead of time or not, but we're going to talk about training arms and training legs, like leg days, arm days, stuff like that. So we've gotten a few questions
about
that.
Your traditional approach to lifting weights that most every high school guy thinks is the way to go or the only option.
Yeah.
We tend not Sneak to think, peek. That's not true.
Yeah, we tend not to think about like bodybuilding so much anymore, but still, there's tons of bodybuilding magazines out there, and people still read them.
Yeah, the bodybuilding magazines are the ones that are...
Remains the dominant culture.
They've probably done the best job of marketing and putting someone on the cover. Yeah. But if you look at like Muscle and Fitness, you know, the guy they had on the cover of the magazine 5 years ago compared to the guy they have on the cover now, I remember one or two years ago, Rob Orlando got put on the cover, and they didn't put him on the cover before that because he was too small. You know, he wasn't big enough or something.
And now they see the value. And
I think now Rich Froning's been on the cover, who's much smaller than, relatively smaller than Rob Orlando even.
Flex remains devoted to that.
I was just about to say that.
Flex is ridiculous.
When is Flex going to go out of business?
Yeah,
it's a 100-page magazine.
Has monsters on the cover.
50 pages of that magazine are for the latest ridiculously stupid supplement.
At least.
That probably costs $100 a jug.
Was it Flex?
5 cents worth of stuff.
Flex will be around as long as there's fraternities.
And then there's always that featured program from bodybuilder XY who shows you his blasting glute program. And it's just everything for three sets of 15. It's like 45 exercises with three to five sets of 10 to 15 written next to it. That's always the program. Like, it's just nothing. And you forget people. We have even simple ideas about how we program and push people towards goals. Mm-hmm. But you realize that most people, when they look at those goals, or they look at those programs for bodybuilders, they don't see there's literally no plan. There's just go into the gym, work isolated movements till you can't move anymore, douse yourself with drugs. That's the program.
Seems come to back, work pretty
fully recovered, destroy yourself, mm-hmm. douse yourself with drugs. It's just day to day, week to week. That's the program.
Yeah, especially for everyone in that magazine specifically.
Yeah.
Now, Muscle and Fitness has kind of shifted away from being like Flex to more kind of like Men's Health.
Yep.
Like Men's Health has always had like fit, but like relatively thin people on the cover. And right. Flex is the exact opposite. It's always just these huge bodybuilding monsters.
Wearing like purple Zubaz.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they have to special order like all their clothes because they don't fit into any normal people clothes.
You know what's funny is just the other day, Facebook won't leave me alone. It keeps saying they suggest that I become friends with Bob Harper. Because I have a lot of friends that are friends with Bob Harper on Facebook. He's like, you should be friends. I was like, fine, I'll just send a friend request. Mm-hmm. And but I was looking at his profile picture, and the guy is skinny. Like, he's not really even that muscular. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, like, this guy is what people are looking up to now for. That's the fit guy. Mm-hmm. And I remember when he wouldn't nowhere. You know, he's lean, but he's not like 4% body fat lean. He's like 7.
He's probably the most famous. You know? Mm-hmm. Health and fitness guy amongst the community of people who spend their nights watching reality TV, which is like 90% of the country.
Yeah.
So he quite obviously has latched on to this because it's a marketing thing for him. But he's quite good at that because he's a world famous personal trainer. I don't respect those guys at all because they get very big people on the shows. Like Jane and I watched this and couldn't believe.
We just don't respect the show. I mean, he's gladly
cashing the checks and training people to on the show. So
as would I.
I've got a problem with it. But he had a guy who was like 480 pounds, who was complete, sedentary on every level. This mm-hmm. guy doesn't even walk. He just sits in couches all day. Doesn't work. Doesn't do anything. And they gave the big, "Do you want to change your life? Do you want to change your life forever?" Give him a big motivation pep talk. Yeah, I want to do it. Okay, so what we'll do is fucking prowler pushes. Your first workout until you fucking die. That was the transition. And the guy's like, "I can't do it. I fucking gonna have a heart attack. This is just weakness. You're going to push through it." No, he could really die. He has done nothing and he's doing prowler pushes for the first workout. And then it's just a little too much, man. It's just complete. I know you can have an entertaining show, but also have some sort of safety in mind or some sort of prudency for what's what's acceptable.
Yeah, that's definitely not what I would
have.
Have
you ever watched The Biggest Loser?
I've seen one episode. McGolder told me about the beginning of one of the seasons where they lined everybody up and their first challenge or whatever was to run a 40-yard sprint, and they're all 300-400 pounds like you're saying. Yeah. And they're trying to run a full speed 100% sprint in a race from dead cold. They're just like, "All right, welcome to the show. We're gonna run a 40. Line it up."
Some guy pops his hamstring and they start screaming at him.
Yeah, someone pulled their hamstring, which was inevitable, and then other people are tripping and like tumbling.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was hilarious and probably got great ratings. It's not intelligent at all, which has nothing to do with why they made the show. But
I don't give anybody a pass on that kind of stuff because some unfit person gonna go out and give that a go. Because, well, they're doing that on TV. I need to be doing that.
Yeah, a lot of people copy what they do, which is amazing.
The innocent ignorant out there will go out and try that. And then they realize it sucks and they go, "Well, I've tried the training. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So I will pursue other things like have my stomach stable together because I can't train because I've tried things that just are not working."
Mm-hmm.
So, no, Bob and his fancy $800 haircuts doesn't get a pass. He's a nice enough guy. And Lord knows I'd like to have the money he has, but I wouldn't try to do it that way. So, whatever.
Yeah. I remember later in that same episode, they were trying to hold front planks and they're like 400 pounds. Like, how can you even get into that position? And I remember like seeing, like thinking about how they were editing the show. They would show the people for like half a second in the front plank and then back to the guy like screaming at him and then like back to the people. And it's like four different cameras from four different angles where they caught these people for like a quarter of a second in that position. And then they edited it together where it looked like it happened for like 10 minutes where they were screaming at him and they were all sitting there like, "Oh my God," like it burns.
It's probably like 30 seconds.
Yeah, you can watch at the absolute most.
You can watch it recognizing that it's not reality. It's fine. But a lot of people still think those shows are based in reality. Like people who somehow people watch the Keeping Up with the Kardashians and don't blow their heads off.
Well, I don't know how that happens. I hope that people are starting at least come to the realization after what 10 years of reality shows that they're not reality. So hopefully that's the case. But there probably is a large segment of the population
still love that professional wrestling. Love it.
Yeah, they love it, but I don't know. Hopefully they're not trying to take it home.
That's probably our off-topic introduction of the day.
Yeah, right. We got a couple of questions from some people in the gym.
Yeah, I got one question from...
the Googles in the internet community.
Richard, we started talking about eccentric loading and how it could be beneficial for training. So
what is that for everyone in the audience that doesn't know what eccentric loading is?
Eccentric loading, that is the muscles contracting against the force, and it's actually lengthening while it's contracting. And so there's three different types of muscle action. You have eccentric, isometric, where the muscle is contracting to fight against a force, but it's not moving at all. And then contraction, where the muscle's getting shorter, so it's actually moving a load. So
what are some practical examples of each one of those?
Practical example. A plank would be an isometric hold. A iron cross would be an isometric hold. And then eccentric loading is usually just the, say when you're doing a squat while you're going down. So if you're going down and squat really slow, I don't know, if you're doing negatives on pull-ups, you jump up chin over the bar and then let yourself down slowly.
So it's the down part of the movement.
You jump off a box and land.
That's right.
A brief, very forceful eccentric contraction.
Right. And then concentric is when you're going up. Mm-hmm. It's when you're pulling yourself up on a pull-up bar, when you at the bottom of the squat and you start moving up, when you bench press, the bar is moving off your chest up. So that's a concentric load. So there's three different types, and one of our guys read an article talking about the benefits of eccentric loading. And this is a guy that runs who's trying to get better at running 400 meters at a time, and he doesn't want to gain weight. So in his case, I would recommend not doing as much, not going out of your way to do eccentric loading, because we don't want to put on muscle mass and stuff like that.
He's trying to do a 400 meter sprint.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's another eccentric.
He doesn't want to put on weight, and he just wants to, he really just needs to move faster.
Yeah. I think there are two ways to approach it. Before anybody goes, okay, here's Chris blabbering again about something. I did my thesis on this topic, so give me a break. Okay, whatever.
What was your thesis on? Like the
efficacy of eccentric loading to improve concentric performance.
Okay.
So what we tested was we used weight releasers. It's like a big metal hook that goes over the barbell. I mean, you've seen it, but I'll describe them for the sake of the audience. Like it's a pole with a little base plate that holds weights. You attach a hook to it. You can put that hook on a barbell. And it's designed as such. Actually, Louis Simmons let me borrow his pair to use in the study. It's pretty cool. He's like, take them, whatever. Just tell us how they do.
Mm-hmm.
So they're designed so when you unrack a barbell, let's say for a squat, you squat down and you adjust it to where right when you get to the bottom of your range of motion, the plates hit the ground, the tip of the plate, and it sort of makes the hooks pop off the bar. So when you go to raise the bar, you have anywhere from, in my study, it was something like 20% of your best squat to like 80% of your best squat would pop off the bar, then you would jump with a much lighter load.
The eccentric load was 20 to 80%?
Yeah. And then okay. The concentric was maybe like 20 or 30%.
Okay.
Your typical jump squat. A light load that you could push against, but it wouldn't really freak you out.
So you start at the top, you go down with 400 pounds, and then 200 pounds pops off, and then you try and jump with a lighter load.
Yeah, or 170 or something, whatever. Yeah. So it was pretty novel, pretty extreme little protocol.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being, there's lots of evidence that shows if you increase that loading, the performance goes up. But the key finding of that study was actually that there wasn't a big effect of the loading.
Mm-hmm.
You had a little bit of a sloppy technique on the heavy loads, but it didn't really help jumping much. And my conclusion from that was that what really mattered wasn't the amount of the load. It was how quickly the load was applied. Because if you look at people in athletics or in any kind of testing environment, if you had them jump from the floor onto a box, they can jump so high. If you have them jump from a box onto the ground, onto another box, assuming that they're fit enough to be able to absorb that force and reverse it, they can jump higher. Mm. It's the same as if you squat down, pause, and then try to jump. That's a lot harder than just dipping and jumping. That's because the amount of force and the speed at which you're producing that force is so high, it's stretching the tissues. You get a little elastic rebound. You're propelling yourself up. So what really mattered wasn't how much, it was just how fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the important thing to consider here would be, one, if you want to gain muscle size, regardless of what you're trying to do, things like pulling a deadlift and then lowering the deadlift would be very important for you to have more eccentric loading in your back and your hips. Squatting down, like most weightlifters do, and then getting a rebound and coming up would probably be a good way to build leg size, because every weightlifter in the world has huge legs if they're qualified and advanced. You probably get a lot of benefit out of squat cleans because you have a huge eccentric loading component at the bottom and you can pop up. Bench press, lower down, controlled, pause, push. That being said, if you want to be the best athlete possible and you want to be able to be very strong and explosive, then your eccentric action should be fast. So we talk about things like tempo training and lowering the bar for a specific count. I'm going to lower it down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Pause. 1, 2, push. 1. That kind of shit, I think, is completely stupid. You should lower and reverse weights as absolutely as fast as you can. Like, if you look at really qualified weightlifters, the most impressive thing about them, and what I wish I could go back and change in my own training, was learning how to essentially fall quickly under a high load and reverse it explosively. If you can do that, you're probably prepared for most athletic activities you're going
to
face.
And that's why weightlifting it can be really good, as opposed to just doing back squats.
Yeah, or when powerlifters train that way, like they train the squat properly. Like if I could go back in time, I would do far more learning how to rebound at a bottom, stuff like that. So that's one thing that's unique to weightlifting. Heavy loads, bouncing out of the bottom, that is really useful.
Okay.
That's my high level take on it.
And you're talking about, you know, what Chris is talking about is like loading during training. And I think one of the things that what I was kind of thinking about when I heard the question was, do we want to do a lot of training that involves eccentric loading? And what's the effect of eccentric loading? Like if you do a lot of negatives or eccentric, any kind of movement,
this guy wants to run faster, he should, like anybody who wants to be, like Doug says, the key for him is just trying to train to be more athletic in a gym. That will include fast, forceful eccentric contractions. Right. If he was to do a lot of purposeful eccentric loading, he would probably have a little extra soreness. He probably wouldn't be training as fast as he should, and he may not get the result he wants for his sprinting.
What I don't like about eccentric loading, or you know, added eccentric loading for this guy, is it's going to cause more muscle damage. So eccentric is going to cause the most muscle damage, isometric the next, and then concentric is going to cause the least amount of muscle damage. Mm-hmm. And anytime you train, you're causing damage to your muscles, and it takes time to recover. That's why you wait a day or two to train again. And for this guy, I don't want him to do a bunch of eccentric stuff like purposefully, so that he can get back in the gym and train again. Because if we can increase training frequency, that'd be a lot more beneficial to him being a better athlete. So I don't want to focus on eccentric or even isometric a whole lot. I mean, that's going to play a part in the programming. There's balance there.
Yeah.
But if you're doing a whole lot of eccentric loading, it can be good for making muscles bigger because you're like wiping them out and they're going to come back bigger. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to come back stronger. So if you're trying to become a bigger, stronger guy, there might be a phase of training that you want to dedicate to a lot of eccentric stuff. You want to cause a lot of muscle damage.
I think it's as simple as thinking, okay, instead of letting my deadlifts down quicker, or dropping them completely, I will lower them. That's really all the detail you'd probably need to add for most people. You don't need to think about intentional tempo or intentional negatives, because those things are maybe not required, but for a few special people who might be able to do that usefully.
In my opinion, tempo training should probably be saved for bodybuilders and maybe really advanced athletes that need to possibly go through a phase of training where they're trying to make their muscles bigger to raise the potential for strength.
Yeah.
Outside of for that, I'm not sure. You know, I've actually heard of people getting rhabdo from doing tempo bodyweight tempo squats.
Really?
Yes. There was a case. I was talking to one coach. He was talking about this. And
Coca-Cola urine.
And I think they were taking an advanced training technique and applying it to a first timer. Type of thing.
That's a cardinal rule they break, is that people associate complexity and fanciness with efficacy and training. And so it's And it's the easiest mistake for anybody to make. We still probably will be attracted by shiny, pretty things in the gym, cool toys and cool ideas. But there's a good reason why the most impressive people in the world do the simplest things, because those still are the things that just work. I mean, we would like for that not to be the case. We would love to develop fancy proprietary techniques for training, then copyright them and implement them and whatever. But damn it, the truth of it is you can't get better than just barbells. I would like it not to be the case. I would like for fancier things to be thought about, conceptualized, experimented with. We get some cool result. We can sort of tinker and do all that. I wish it was like that, like a true experiment. But still, the best things to do are jumping and pull-ups and cleans squatting. I mean, I wish it wasn't the case, but damn it, it just is true.
Yeah,
it's like the earth is round. It's true. It's true. No matter what idea you have in your mind differently, you can't change fact. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, I was talking about a little bit about how like concentric causes the least amount of muscle damage, and that's why we weightlift so often, is because you can do snatches, cleans, and jerks, and there's not a lot of eccentric loading going on. You're not spending a lot of time in the eccentric portion of the movement, so you can train it more frequently, incur less muscle damage, but be training your muscles to move faster and be stronger. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason you can weightlift, and why weightlifters are, you know, they're in a squat position 5 or 6 days a week, and they're just fine, and that's because they don't spend a lot of time in eccentric motion.
And the eccentric loading exercises are with joints that are a little more robust, the hips and knees.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, like me, I'm a huge proponent of squatting heavy 3 days a week as a minimum. But for bench, I'm experimenting a little bit with a little higher frequency and pressing exercises. But to do it heavy, you can't replicate the same kind of results. And so you got to be careful with how you try to implement eccentric training.
So don't take your weightlifting advice about being able to pull multiple days a week.
Don't
apply that to deadlift.
No.
No.
Just because it's concentric only doesn't mean you can do it multiple days a week.
Deadlifting is not weightlifting.
My rule on my deadlifting, like I think Glenn Pendley said at best, that if you are good at deadlifting, you can do it more often because your body is, the mechanics are probably favorable for you. So you could probably pull heavy every week and maybe do other training with features of deadlift during the week. But if you're not built for deadlifting and you particularly aren't very good at it, that means your leverages are bad. It means you're going to put a lot of load on your lower back, for instance. It means you can probably pull heavy. Like my approach I'm trying now is in a 3 week cycle, there's going to be one heavy pull only in there. I get in trouble of getting a little froggy. I want to pull more often. There'll be one pull for reps, and there'll be one pull. Well, one of those weeks will be focused on just quick pulls.
Yeah, if you're pulling over 500-600 pounds, then you're going to pull a lot less frequently than someone who's brand new to it.
And if you can,
if you're pulling under 300 pounds, you could probably pull at least every week, if not biweekly.
Yeah. So how do you train your deadlift? My current thinking is, I really like squatting all the time. Basically, that's going to help you. And then you can do good mornings and RDLs as they should be done, probably just about every day. Meaning, if you do them with a good back position and you're not trying to cheat, you're trying to do actual good morning and RDL. Every day you could probably do those exercises in some way, you know, for a couple sets of 5, 6, 7, 8 reps. It's not going to be a big deal. You're going to train the muscles that are going to do the pulling and squatting. But heavy deadlifts are a beast, man.
Mm-hmm. Another place that concentric only training is really convenient is conditioning. Like you were talking about prowler pushing earlier.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Prowler pushing is fantastic. Like you
could push the prowler every day if you wanted, if you could emotionally handle it.
Yeah. You know, you extend your legs and you contract the muscle, but then there's no downward portion. You just cycle back with no load and put your foot back on the ground. And so you can run prowler sprints, you know, every single day almost.
Yeah, so like if you're a strength athlete who wants to work on his conditioning but doesn't particularly like the idea of getting weaker, then sled pushing is brilliant for you. If you think you want to go do sprints, you're going to suffer at least a little while because all that loading is going to cause you soreness. It's going to detract from your squats and your pulls and everything else. The prowler is brilliant because it will smack you down to the ground and you can be recovering fine in 10 minutes after you're done.
I've actually heard of people getting sore from doing sled sprints. They're like, I pushed the prowler. I got so sore. I'm like, you are out of shape.
You are brand new to training.
Yeah. Like, if you've been training for a while, sled sprints should never make you sore.
Yeah, the sled is just acutely terrible. But after that, you're fine. You're 100%.
Yeah. So if you're getting sore from it, you're just It's just because you're still new.
Same with the concept two rower.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All that stuff is going to be, if you want to get in better shape, raise your work capacity, do those things all the time. Do it in the morning before you go to work. Go in for lunch, do some rowing. At the end of the day, do some rowing. If you want to lose weight, do those things you can do all the time.
Yeah, rowing, sled pushing, air dyne's another great one.
I'll count swimming and shit in there. Basic activities that are going to build your general work capacity and not take away from you. Like they're just all basically just adding to your goals, not taking away.
Yeah, they're not going to beat you up at all. Most of them are super conservative too. If you got a competition coming up in a week and you're just like, man, I've had a bunch of injuries in the last couple of months and I just don't want any of them to flare back up. Mm-hmm. Sled pushing and air dyne, like work your system super hard without beating up your joints or tearing down any muscle mass in the process.
I remember you and I did an experiment on ourselves with carb loading before that marathon.
Okay.
And did you do it with me or was it just me by myself? I think we did it together.
Sounds like you just did it.
Well, Doug, no, I did do it. I just wondered why you're saying it.
Because one of the things that we did was we did a lot of things that were concentric only leading up to that because we didn't want to cause muscle damage. Mm-hmm. We ate no carbohydrates for like 3 days, did a lot of glycogen burning type activities like pushing the sled, but didn't cause a lot of muscle damage because we didn't want to be jacked up before we ran the race.
It's hard to store carbohydrates in your cells if all your cells are torn apart.
Yeah.
That's true.
So
yeah, it makes sense.
We spent 3 days trying to find ways to do concentric only movements so we could waste all the glycogen. And then we spent 24, 36 hours
eating whatever you
replenishing.
Find.
So that's a proper carb load. You know, do a deplete. You do a deplete and then a replete. Most people that do carb loading just do a replete, which is technically not a replete.
Meal the night before and that's it.
Yeah. So
yeah, you gotta make sure you get rid of all scraps of carbs before you try to load, or else you're just a fat guy.
We made one tactical error in the experiment because we didn't train to run at all. So our limiting factor had nothing to do with glycogen and everything to do with
being completely unskilled.
like just tearing up our lower legs running on concrete for 26 miles. Yeah. So that was our tactical error. We were like, oh, man, I didn't see that coming.
You get to the experiment, like, oh shit, I forgot that there was a marathon in this experiment. Oh god.
Ugh, my feet felt like they got beat with a hammer for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad.
Yeah, it's not a healthy activity.
All right, let's take a break real quick and we'll get back to some more questions. We're going to talk about a little bit about muscle building for CrossFitters, but we'll extrapolate a little more on that. That's the wrong word to use there. And then we'll talk about
everybody knows what you're talking about, bro.
Training arms and legs. All right. Well, maybe we're doing a little bit of that and it's working. They sound complicated. They must be smart.
Must be really smart.
We're trying to avoid
that.
Super
smart guys, bro. All
right, guys, welcome back. We're gonna talk a little bit about next kind of. Doug.
Well said.
My brain just farted. All right, muscle building for CrossFitters versus strength. I think we kind of covered that already. Talk a little
you
bit.
Should,
about,
you should we, say we did? Your. Just in short, say your little thing about gymnastics and weightlifting. How about that work?
Oh yeah. I was gonna talk about that with arms and legs. People are like, "What do you do to train your arms?"
Yeah, just wrap those up in the same thing.
Yeah, I'll go ahead. I'll just hit that first. We have members. Usually, they're relatively new. They haven't been in the gym for years and years and years, and they go, "Well, what do I do for arms?" Or you know, I used to do leg day, but now we kind of squat, and then we do a bunch of other stuff too. You know, Doug asked a good question. He's like, well, what do you want your arms, you know, look around the room and whose arms do you want to have type of thing. But kind of start talking about how usually gymnasts have the best upper bodies. You're like, oh, I'd love to have an upper body like a gymnast. I wouldn't want their lower body. It's usually, you know,
just pathetic. Legs.
But then, what I was saying was that gymnasts have probably the best upper body strength and look the best, and then weightlifters have the best lower body strength and look the best. And that's one reason we do CrossFit is because we do a lot of gymnastics and weightlifting. There you go. Dude, if you want a better looking upper body, if you want good looking arms, you know, maybe you should start working towards the progression of the Iron Cross and the rings. A good start would be learning how to do a muscle up. So I know that if I do 30 muscle ups for time, my biceps and triceps are pretty blasted, and my pecs are all swole, and I feel pretty good about myself. And then I have to get a squat, make my butt bigger, even everything out. So
okay, just for devil's advocate, what about the people who can't do 30 muscle ups? What would you have them do, bro?
A progression.
Because I cannot do.
You would
for sure not.
You would do a progression towards getting a muscle up. There's a lot of progressions out there, but you know, if the technique is what eludes you, then just doing a lot of ring pull ups and ring dips can be very helpful. Or bar pull ups, bar dips. So
use your arms to move yourself.
Yeah, I promise you're using them.
Using them will make you better.
If you've been doing curls for the last 10 years and you're addicted to doing curls and you just love doing curls, there's nothing wrong with adding some curls to the end of your workout. But still,
curls.
Go do your ring pull-ups and your ring dips and handstand push-ups.
If you can still do curls, I commend you. Your biceps should be completely exhausted by that point.
Yeah. I will laugh at you. Yeah, don't do curls and then try to get better at pull-ups.
No,
like,
no.
You're doing it backwards.
You're doing it all wrong. But if you do, like... Just like if, you know, if we're talking about like squats, if you squat the way you should squat, you shouldn't have much energy for doing other things.
Right.
And if you do, then you can just do them, you know, with a little bit of effort, and that's fine. Like, but you wouldn't do, you wouldn't blast yourself with leg curls and then try to squat. Same thing goes for pull-ups. If you do them right, there may be a little energy left over for some curls, and that's fine. But don't like do curls for max and then try to do pull-ups. It's just not gonna really work.
I can't
work.
Imagine how ridiculous it would look to watch somebody go pull like 500 pounds on a clean and jerk and then walk over and do leg extensions.
Right.
The
for
Chinese
like, for like three
do,
sets
the
of
the Chinese do that kind of stuff.
Well, there's a video somewhere of a Chinese weightlifter doing it. That doesn't mean they do it.
Yeah. I don't know what their approach
like a staple
with them
in their
is.
Program.
I mean,
right.
They have a whole myriad of things they do for, I don't know if they treat it as recovery or just as assistance or when they do it before or after, but
I mean,
it's a very minor part
of
the program.
I can see, oh, I totally jacked up my hamstring. Well, instead of not doing anything, why don't you go do some leg extensions? I could see that happening.
Everything has its place as long as you keep it in its proper place, which is not replacing things like really hard pull-ups with really easy curls.
Yeah, go find one of those gymnasts with big biceps and ask them if they go and do bicep curls. I'm pretty sure they're going to say no. No, I do a bunch of muscle-ups. And actually, they don't even do muscle-ups. You know, they do muscle-ups all the time so they can do their other stuff.
Like muscle-ups for them are like walking up five stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of like you do that every day. It's just something you do.
Yeah. If you can do 20 planche push-ups in a row, which are push-ups without your feet on the ground, then your shoulders don't need to do front raises with 10-pound plates.
That's
a waste
add,
of time at that point.
That wouldn't add anything for you.
Nope.
Yeah, I remember I heard I have no idea who this was, but he went and bench pressed like 700 pounds, and then someone said, "What are you going to do for your triceps?" And he goes, "I don't know what I'm going to do for my triceps that didn't just do."
Right.
I just pressed 700 pounds. I'm going to go do like skull crushers and tricep kickbacks for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Again, there's nothing wrong with all those little exercises, but my opinion is if there's more energy, you could bench more often.
Yeah.
Probably be a way to get your bench up.
I remember when I bench, you know, I'll bench and do a few sets and I get up. My triceps are usually like, you know, they're done. Well, I'm doing it right too. So you could be doing it wrong. Like, oh, I don't feel it in my triceps
at
all.
I still think one of the better exercises for assistance for weightlifters is just like a little incline press. You don't have to stand up with it. So you know, you give your legs and lower back a little bit of a break from holding weight over your head, but you're still pushing a weight overhead, and you can probably do a little more than you can on the press, of course, which is just standing on your feet and trying to lift the bar overhead. So you can train your arms a little better. As a rationale and a place in your programming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tricep extensions.
I like close grip for that.
When I say close grip,
I don't mean like, you know, thumbs distance apart. I'm talking
close grip, steep
I'm
incline
talking
presses.
Like, you know, shoulder width.
Close grip, steep incline presses are really fantastic. It's not too bad on your shoulders. It's a lot less painful than a bench press. You don't get a whole lot of adverse forces cranking on your shoulders. But you really work your arms really hard. That's not a fun exercise to do. To do that for 2, 3, 4 sets of 5 to 10 reps after you do some other more important stuff. That's way, way better than extensions or pushdowns and all that kind of crap.
Absolutely.
And that is something, too, that would be pretty novel to most CrossFitters at this point. There's not a whole lot of incline pressing in the CrossFit world.
But I found it's a good way to get better at pressing and push pressing and jerking. That's a really good assistance exercise to help you on that because you're putting a weight over your head repeatedly and you have to focus on extending. You don't have to worry about your legs and everything.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice.
Yeah, most definitely. Doug, you put some up here about muscle building for CrossFitters and versus strength.
Well, we've had a lot of people come into the gym and they, you know, they're just starting out and they're not really that strong yet. And they're, say they're 165 pounds. Maybe they came from the distance running world and they want to get into CrossFit. They heard it was a great way to stay in shape. And they heard that CrossFit athletes are, you know, some of the most fit people in the world. And they associate fitness with pure cardiovascular capacity. Mm-hmm. And so for those guys, I think, you know, they don't even need to focus on cardio at all. That's all they've been doing for the last 10 years. And if they want to be competitive as CrossFitters, they need to put on some muscle mass and gain some strength. And a lot of times those go hand in hand. But I think at least initially, they need to focus on actually gaining the size. And the strength will come with it. But they need to get bigger. If you're 165 pounds, you're not going to be a competitive CrossFitter on the national or world scale. You have to gain some weight.
Yeah, on those odd sled pushing or lifting tasks, you're just going to get manhandled.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do it. You can't push a 400-pound sled if you're 165 pounds as well as someone who weighs 210.
If you could do it as well, you'd be a very special guy.
Yeah, and there's just not that many people out there like that. Like, I mean, Spieler's probably the you know, biggest example of a guy who used to be smaller and had to get bigger with the times. As it got heavier every year at the games, he had to keep putting on the weight and putting on strength in order to stay competitive.
Yeah, from what I understand, he does conditioning twice a week, and the rest of his training is just trying to get bigger and stronger.
He's so good at conditioning.
Yeah. Supposedly, yeah. I guess he wrestled way back in the day, and it's one of those things where he's just a metabolic mutant is what they called him or something.
I don't think he did too well on that little marathon they had, right, at the games.
Oh, yeah?
I think he got beat up a bit on that.
He probably didn't train for it.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's probably doing conditioning twice a week.
All the barbell for rep stuff he's probably not going to have much of a problem with.
He looks like a totally different person now than he did like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He's much bigger.
Yeah. So you're saying, you know, if you're starting CrossFit and you're not 200 pounds, your first goal might be to get to 200 pounds. And I agree.
Or at least 185 or so.
I say get to 200 and then start throwing the conditioning back in. And then you'll be at 185 after that.
And then know that you got to commit to developing your body for a couple of years, which is a flash in a pan. That's really quick, actually. But you've got to have the patience to sort of cultivate these abilities.
Right.
And grow yourself in the right way. Eating decent quality food, being patient, letting things develop. Don't just think it's going to happen in a month.
You got to think about things in phases. It used to be like, oh, you're a pretty strong guy. You can prep for the 2008 games starting
as you stay really
6 months out.
Yeah.
But now it's one of those things where, you know, you got to go through phases of training. All right, let's go through a phase where we're getting really strong. And we're planning for 2 years out. Like if someone starts CrossFit now, it's like, I wouldn't even think about going to regionals this year. Like if someone came to me today and was like, all right, we'll start looking at 2015. You know, let's get you really big and strong. And then you'll always be doing some conditioning. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what you were talking about during your seminar. You were talking about spinning the plates and really focusing on, you know, this one aspect of here, you're never going to stop spinning these plates over here.
So you know you have to gain weight. It's okay if you gain weight and your conditioning suffers a bit in the short term because of it. One thing needs to happen at a time. You can't gain weight and stay optimally conditioned.
Right.
You can gain the weight, come back a little bit once you get a little to where you want to go, a little past it, come back a little bit, and then you can reintroduce and refocus.
Yeah.
You can't do those things at the same time.
And you feel like you're getting out of shape. That's okay.
Yeah. If you're really strong, it's really easy to get in shape. It doesn't take that long.
Right.
But if you're in shape and then you decide you want to get strong, that's a much longer process to get strong. It's going to take you years to get strong.
The strength takes focus. Like I went through a phase this year where I wanted to do the CrossFitting for a while, try that out. And then knowing that the strength would dip, and the strength did dip, but not terribly. But you do enough strength to keep it where you can keep it. And you put the focus on trying these wads and stuff. And now I'm kind of interested in, okay, well, if I can get to 275, which since I did the simple strength seminar, would be a 35-pound drop. When did we do that seminar? Was that beginning of May or very end of April, right?
I think it was April. I was gone the whole month of May.
I'm coming up on a 30-pound drop since then. And my strength's improving now, but I can't do, you know, 100-meter sprints for 10, 15 reps while I try to make my squat go up while I'm also dropping weights. Pick what's most important to you now in a reasonable amount of time and focus on it.
Yeah.
Fuck us, as my boss actually says. If he's French. We must fuck us on our power.
Got another question in from Brad. He was asking about certifications. He mentioned ACE and NSCA. The NSCA's is CSCS.
Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist.
Those of us sitting
sounds
in this.
Sounds very fancy.
They all sound very fancy. Mm-hmm. The three of us sitting in a circle, I mean, we all have several certifications. USAW, NSCA, CrossFit. I'm probably leaving some stuff out. I don't know.
I've got a certification in medical publications, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but we all are certified in very numerous things, aren't we?
That's right.
We're all very skilled in what we do.
But
I want a coffee certification, like a barista certified specialist.
We should just start. And this, you know, that's actually really interesting. That's how a lot of these certifications get started, is someone goes, I'll just make a certification. We'll build a website. We'll make a test. And now you're,
boom.
That's kind of how CrossFit started. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, we'll hold a weekend seminar, charge $1,000, and now you're certified. Congratulations. Now you can put this at the end of your name. There's no one stopping anybody from starting a certification process. Now, it being accredited is a different story, and I'm not sure everyone knows this, but CrossFit was not even accredited until about 2 years ago. So they were doing certifications.
Is good.
Accrediting is good. That means that there was a third party that came in and made sure that you were going through some kind of standardized process.
Yeah, you're testing appropriately, and you're doing it the right way. You can actually certify these people are meeting a standard.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're not just like, you know, just
hanging them out for doing whatever. Exchange for money.
Right. So, I mean, and there's nothing stopping people from doing certifications that aren't accredited. So you might want to look for that if you're looking to get certified. And as far as certifications go, this one person was asking me about ACE versus NSCA, and it always just comes down to it depends on which certification is the best.
You just go online and take a 20 question test or something.
No, I think ACE is a little more advanced than that now.
Okay, hopefully.
I think every certification started off like that, and then they've all, you know, gotten better. And there's nothing wrong with a lot of these certifications. We were at a conference a couple weeks ago, and I won the ACE certification, and they gave me all the textbooks needed for it. And I started looking through, and I was like, this is actually really good. Stuff that's not going to get covered in a CrossFit certification. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of kinesiology and a lot of stuff like that, that if you didn't have a degree in exercise science, this would probably be a really good resource for you to go, oh, this does this, this does that. Talked a little bit about energy systems and stuff like that on a really basic level, but most people have never been exposed to it mm-hmm. like that. And so I think ACE is good. That text was really good. I'm not certified in that, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on what you want to do. If you want to go work for a college in the sports department, you have to get NSCA. They're probably not going to take anything else. If you want to work at a CrossFit gym or open a CrossFit gym, you need to get CrossFit certified. You know, if you want to run a weightlifting club, get USA Weightlifting, you know, certified. So there's a lot of certifications out there, and I don't know of any where I'm not going to bash any or anything like that, but
not sure, try to figure out what your potential boss has and
right.
go that route.
Yeah, exactly. And I personally, like, if I'm just seeking knowledge, I think the best one that I went to that was a weekend certification was the CrossFit certification.
I enjoyed it too. It's really good.
It was really good.
You certainly have the most practical application to stuff you're going to use and do every day.
You actually have to do the stuff as you go through and learn the stuff.
Right. A lot of certs are heavy science focused, kind of like you were saying a second ago. You got this textbook for the certification, and it was nothing but like kinesiology and anatomy and stuff like that, which is good. I'm not saying you shouldn't know that stuff. I love all that stuff, but most people aren't really going to use that on a day-to-day basis training clients. You'd be much better off if you wanted to just have one weekend cert where you're doing it for the knowledge, to go to a CrossFit cert, and they'll teach you exactly what to show the people
right.
that you're going to train the next day, and you can use all of it immediately.
Yeah, if I'm introducing somebody to training new, I'd rather have someone CrossFit certified than somebody with a biology degree.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, the person with a biology degree understands adaptation and stimulus and all this stuff, but they all have no idea how to apply it, and that's what's not. You know, that's what's important.
The CrossFit one is probably the most expensive one, but a cool thing is, one, the quality of, like you're saying, the quality of the education is pretty good. The material is good. It's presented really well. Mm-hmm. And they actually do a really good job of bringing in the best people they have to where you are to deliver the information. Mm-hmm. Like, you may show up and Chris Spieler may be your instructor for the weekend.
Yeah.
You'll probably get one-on-one personal time with him if you wanted during at least an hour of that. And he'll be there teaching you how to do every lift you need to learn for the whole weekend. If you put it in perspective, if you're coached by one of the best athletes CrossFit has produced, and you want to get better at CrossFit, it's probably worth investing in it so he can be paid to fly from Utah to Memphis, wherever you're at, to give you that education. So put everything into perspective and keep in mind that, you know, you're willing to put, you know, $1,200 a year into your phone bill. That's not as important to you as CrossFit, so you might want to invest in yourself if you want to get really good at CrossFit.
Yeah, and you pay for what you get. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean...
I guess for everything, including certifications, you spend $100 on a certification that you take online,
you're
going to get a $100 certification.
We said that before about why people will complain sometimes about the price of CrossFit memberships and stuff. I go, well, somebody who, between their phone and their TV, if they're spending $200 a month to sit for an hour a night and be entertained, you'd probably want to pay $100, $150 to have your life completely reinvented and have your fitness given back to you. That's kind of a ridiculous line of reasoning to go down. Like, oh, well, it's so expensive to have the life I want. Invest in yourself and what's important to you. It's okay to spend lots of money on things that are really important to you. Mm-hmm. Don't blow money on stupid shit that's not important to you. That's rule number one of economics in my life. If it's important to you, it's okay to spend money. If it's not, don't spend a fucking penny on it.
Yeah.
Get rid of the things that aren't important to you.
I'm with you on that one.
Make some decisions in your life.
Yeah, it's all about priorities. Yeah,
to curse again. I think I've said that.
Yeah, if someone says something's too expensive, it's just a matter of priorities. You know, oh, it's too expensive. It's like, oh, you just don't value that as much as the other stuff you're spending money on, and that's okay. And that's you. And then someone else will come along that has a different set of priorities, and they'll line up better with what we're doing. So
yeah, the budget idea is very interesting because one, it works very well in your life. You ask yourself, what's important to me? I will go through my house and say, yes or no. This thing important to me? No. Is there a subscription fee associated with this thing? Yes. Get rid of it. Is it sitting around and clogging up my closets? Yes, it is. I need to throw this away. It's a very, very powerful thing to do in your life. Very satisfying.
A great book on that is The Power of Less. You ever read that book?
No, but I agree with it already.
It's fantastic.
But this idea we're talking about is the same with training. If you consider that your resources are finite, you have an hour to train, your body has a limited ability, 100 recovery tokens to recover from whatever you choose to do. You want to leave at some point to go see your family. So this is a finite time. I can only do so many things. Should I curl? No. Should I squat? Squat should probably be included. Should I clean? Yes. Like, what do I want to get better at? I don't really want to get better at jerks. I want to get a big bench press. Okay. Well, most people would say jerks are sort of quantitatively better and qualitatively better because they're more athletic. But if you want to do a powerlifting meet, that changes for you. So asking yourself what you want is very important. I love CrossFit. Do I want bigger arms? Yes. Add in some curls. That's as simple as it is. Ask yourself what's important to you. And if you're thinking about what you did today and you did a list of things that took 45 minutes and those things weren't important to you, you wasted 45 minutes of your time.
You'll never get it back.
Never. You'll die.
Time, the only finite resource, as Paul likes to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really great thing to keep in mind. Great summary, Chris. We're going to wrap up the show now.
Yes. I summarized things.
Yeah, make sure to check out fitter.tv. Check out the shop. And make sure to check out Chris's strength seminar. A lot of people are enjoying it. You can read some good testimonials about it on the website. And check out Technique Quad too, right?
Sound like you're not sure what's on the site.
What's on Technique Quad tomorrow? Or on what are we posting next? Do we know?
I haven't planned the next one yet. We'll plan that later. I'm not sure.
100%. What do you guys want to see on Technique Quad?
That's a good question.
Hit the contact button on the website. Shoot me an email, and we'll try to make sure to get you guys what you want to see on there. And if we don't know what you're talking about, we'll try to find somebody.
Tell us what you'd want us to talk about. Yeah. We'll talk about it. Oh, yeah.
Mobility seminar should be hopefully posted to the site pretty soon.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. CTP's cranking it out. Mm-hmm.
And you got a blog you want to promote, Chris?
Yeah. It's the chrismoreblog.com. Go by there. There's some cool ideas on there. Stuff that occurs to me to say, I say it on the blog. Go read about it.
My mom happens to love the Chris Moore blog, by the way. She eats it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she does.
That's cool. It's funny. I wish I could do more like 10-page storytelling on that blog. But I think what people always love is just like the pithy diagrams I've done occasionally.
The diagrams I like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll probably just start doing more like diagrams. Like, I'll probably just make my stories one paragraph because people just like punchy information, so I'll give it to them.
Yeah,
it's going to be all memes starting in like 6 months.
Training memes.
Nothing but memes.
Here's a picture of a cat with some one line of training wisdom. Take this.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys.